All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone. Apologies for the delay in getting started. Welcome to the Work Group 1 under the Information Blocking Task Force. Andy Trescott?
Present.
Michael Adcock? Cheryl Turney?
Present.
John Kansky? Denny McComb? Cynthia Fisher?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. All right. Mark, I will hand it over to you.
Okay, great. Hey, everyone. Thanks for calling in again. I think we made really good headway yesterday, and I want to just kind of circle back before we jump into HIE and HIN, since Andy's on the call, a few points that we talked about, and also one thing that I missed that I want to make sure we're clear on. First is, and I have my screen pulled up, so if you all have access to it, you can see the EHI definition up on the screen. We landed on our not really changing much from the ONC proposed definition of EHI, except including as defined in HIPAA right here regarding EPHI. But I overlooked, and it was not my intention, that there was one other proposed change to the definition that I believe Andy and maybe Michael had put in there to make after payment right here a parenthetical S to, I guess, indicate multiple payments. Andy, do you want to speak to that change and why you think it's necessary?
Only because you can have more than one payment from more than one source. And you wouldn't want to inadvertently introduce a dependency on it being singular and only addressed when all of them have been made or something. It just covers a whole bunch of potential, it could be misinterpreted.
John just joined.
Hey, John.
What do others think about that one? Any thoughts?
I must confess,
I'm fine with that change.
Yeah.
Sorry, this is Cheryl. I'm fine with that change.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Hey, this is Michael. I think that's fine as well.
Hey, man.
Hey, Michael. Okay. You know, I guess I'll just weigh in. The way I read it was that payment could be plural, but I'm you know, of course, if you all think that's not clear, that adding the parenthetical, you should definitely make that recommendation.
Minor. Fine.
Yep. Okay. All right. So if everyone's okay with that, that will be an additional recommendation. The other issue, it was just the audit issue that we talked about yesterday. And I was filling Andy in just briefly. And I believe I was summarizing what the group said, but essentially that I think everyone felt that audit was really important for patients to know who touched their records or saw them or had access to them. But we weren't sure if that including audit was the appropriate in the definition of EHI, and maybe we should address it in a different way. Was that accurate for those who were on the call yesterday?
Yeah, this is Cheryl. That was accurate.
Well, I'm glad that we discussed it. I'm sorry I wasn't here to be part of that conversation. What was the other way that we thought it could be addressed?
Well, this is John. I think my view was that audit isn't information that's perceived as of the information that's being blocked that causes a problem to patients and the healthcare system. Audit information being blocked isn't the problem, point number one. Point number two is that HIPAA grants patients rights to know where their information has been used and disclosed outside treatment, payment, and operations, and that right exists and largely granted patients a reasonable right to that access today.
Okay, because the only reason I brought it up was that my inbox has lit up in the last week, probably, with various interesting people and groups saying, you guys have completely got it all wrong. You've forgotten all about all the information. And then when you peel back the onion, it's actually not full audit trails. It's just who has accessed my information. And does HIPAA give us what's required there?
So wait a second. If you recall, and I'm not an attorney and don't play one on TV, there was a HIPAA expansion maybe 5 years ago. And one of those things that was contemplated that was deemed, and I don't know at what level it was deemed impractical or unhelpful, was to broaden the patient's right to, right now they have a right to an accounting of disclosure for anything that's outside treatment payment and operations, and it was considered to expand that right to include disclosures for treatment payment and operations. And I think that would be probably literally 500, 1,000, or 50,000 times as much information. And I think that was realized as to be potentially impractical for implementation.
Okay. Boom, boom, boom.
I thought that we yesterday had spoken about how important it is, like in Google or whatever, that you can click on the provenance of where your information has been used and also where it has been brokered. So I thought that it's like a trail, that a historical trail that could be a click for the patients to have access to. And right now, I don't, you know, patients aren't getting access to their information readily available, nor even, many don't even know they have the right to see where it's going. So, and I don't even know of patients knowing how to go approach getting access to how, where it's going. So I think what we're trying to do is, you know, open this up, open the pipeline that patients have ease of access to both their information and their provenance.
Andy, one thing that I'm just thinking about is, do you think that it might implicitly be already included in our definition? I mean, without calling it out, again, the definition is quite broad.
I don't think so, Mark, because the current way the definition is phrased is it's about health conditions and how that health care is provided and about payments around that health care. It's not saying, and who has accessed that information? Because, you know, this is very much about defining what EHI is, as opposed to when we undertake the verb of information sharing, whether that the details of that sharing counts as EHI. Does that make sense? Because this whole set of rules is around information blocking. It's about preventing blocking and enabling sharing. And then it's kind of like the metadata around that information sharing. Should that be considered to be EHI even of itself? I think that's what we're saying. Now, not the full audit trail and everything, because that'd be a nightmare. And let's be fair, keeping track of where information has been shared to, or who has accessed Andy's information, that's not trivial. I'm not saying it's impossible. I don't think it's possible at all. You know, you pass consent directives and all that kind of stuff around all the time, so I don't think this is overly burdensome, and I definitely think it's feasible. I'm just not sure the right place to do it is inside EHI.
This is Cheryl. I don't think it belongs in EHI. I think EHI needs to be specific to the definition we've already defined. If there needs to be additional qualification, that data around that, I mean, in the USCDI task force, we did talk about the fact that we need data provenance, and we got specific guidance from ONC to make it simpler, because if we try to provide that audit trail type of thing that you're talking about, it will never get implemented. And that was their specific guidance.
to the avoidance of doubt, I'm not saying about implementing audit trails. I think implementing full audit trails, sharing the transparency, that would be just a nightmare. And that is overly burdensome and largely ineffective for what we're trying to make happen here. I think I don't want to confuse this necessarily with provenance. Provenance is the lineage of data and where it's come from, who created it, the context, etc. And that makes perfect sense. And I can see why USCDI is touching upon that. What I'm talking about is where information has been shared, okay, as a patient, and it sounds like people are saying HIPAA lets you do this, but as a patient, I should be able to know where my information has been shared to.
Andy, I agree with Cheryl. I think the health definition is fine. I think there is a separate question in the rulemaking, and Mark, you might be able to, it's about something about the export and patients also having control of choice of where they want their data shared. And there's a, I think it talks about in the technology development side of,
yeah,
of that sharing. There's a separate question.
I think so. I'm actually glad to think maybe we should just say, ONC, we think you should consider an additional class of data that concerns the sharing.
I just don't want to make it more complicated than it is, but, you know, I think the health information, the audit, the provenance and the audit trail, I believe, was included in the request for proposal elsewhere. You know, are we making
I think what Cynthia is talking about is the certification criterion for B10, which is data export, which, Cheryl, is that in your work group that's being discussed, or your task force?
Yes, and so I agree with what Cynthia just said, too, is that I agree that we need to provide the data, and it would be more helpful to be provided electronically. I just don't think it belongs in the health information exchange definition, that's all.
I agree with you on that one, Cheryl. I don't think it belongs inside EHI. That's what I'm saying. Do we actually just want to go back and say to ONC, you probably need to come up with an additional class of data definition for these things that don't belong inside EHI but need to be handled?
Exactly.
Well, so I might raise the question to the group, would that be in the context of information blocking, like that this recommendation would be, or would it be more as we're talking about, you know, in the USCDI or B10 context?
I think it should be an information blocking, because at the end of the day, we want to ensure that people are not blocking the access to that information. And I think that's the point Cynthia was trying to make previously, is that if people ask for the data, they have a right to it and they should be provided that data.
And I think this is where one of the things I think we want to be is that the data should be provided. People don't ask because they don't know what they can ask for, right? So I think the one thing is that we want to make sure that there's transparency and there's openness for patients to have access to all of this information, and they don't necessarily have to ask for it, that it's readily available, that they could click on the provenance, or they could look at pricing, they could look at payment past, present, and future, that they could manage their health because it's there for them, to their identifiable through their open API or to their verified repository, that patients have ability to get it. It's sort of like all the information in my bank account is there. My bank doesn't hide the transaction data from me. You know, I see visibly.
Yep. Right, but there are some problems that have to be solved before this can be automated, just so this group knows, because today we don't have a standard way of capturing, like, the organization-level source ID or the date and time stamp in the record so that we can tell you where the data went. So we have to solve that problem in, you know, another work group, but then it needs to come together as the full rule. So it's well and good to put it there, but there is going to need to be some time for implementation, because today there's no standard for capturing any of it. So that makes it problematic to make it available in an automated fashion.
And, I think what's hard in some of these things is that the entanglement on standards that aren't necessary, because if you want to get a committee of 20 to do anything, it can take another 10 years. But a lot of these things are automatic and they're built into the software and can be time stamped. So I think we just want to be really practical and not create unnecessary hurdles. You know, like the processes themselves sometimes feel like information blocking. At least from the patient standpoint, when we look at the world in which we live technologically.
Sure, and I just want to acknowledge John has had his hand in the queue. John Kelsey.
Oh, has he? Sorry, John, you should have just interrupted.
I was trying. Okay, so related to the points that are being made, I just want to ask, and this may land with a thud, but an implementation question. So we're suggesting that a patient can go to whether it's a large IDN or a solo practice and say, I want to know where every lab order ever went, every prescription ever went, every claim ever went, every claim attachment ever went, every electronic fax you ever sent about me, I want to know where it went. I'll wait. How is that possibly implementable?
Thud. We need to discuss this one out, John. This isn't for this group to do. I think we've already established that because it's not inside our remit. But I think it should be discussed, and you know, I'll be delighted to sit down with whoever decides to then take that one forward. But the fact is, knowing where data has gone to is kind of implicit in what 21st Century Cures was trying to say. They're saying you will share that data, and you will make sure parents are aware of what you're doing with that data. Patients are aware of what you're doing with that data. So it is implicit.
Well, so Andy, just to that point, one really problematic aspect of the proposal, if you're not putting in the definition of EHI, Congress said access, exchange, or use of electronic health information. So it would be very problematic, in my opinion, to include it in the information blocking provision, because that wasn't, Congress was pretty specific that we're talking about EHI here.
Okay. So you're saying because we're not including this inside EHI, then we couldn't. Okay. That's nothing to do with commission of intent. That's just to do with the definition, right?
Well, it just has to do with, as far as ONC's ability to implement the recommendations. I
yeah.
see that as a
yeah,
potential.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we making something unnecessarily complicated? Mark, could you clearly just state where we are, and then we move forward. I think we've just been in circles.
Yeah, sure. I think we can definitely move on and maybe come back to this one. So the issue is, I think Andy and others feel that audit is something, and Andy was clear, what he means is a patient being able to see who has touched their records.
Who has shared it, and where has it been shared to? Who's touched by that? Because that makes no sense. Okay, but if it's I don't know, MD Anderson has got a bunch of records, and now Memorial Hermann they've been shared to Memorial Hermann. Knowing that kind of level seems reasonable.
Okay, so are we
also looking to empower the patient that they can deny use for marketing?
Absolutely.
And
well.
Research? You know, because the patient has that opportunity to control their secured health information.
I actually think we should be going there eventually. I think definitely control how my information might be used for marketing purposes, etc. But, you know, let's look at Australia as a counterpoint here. So the Australian Personally Controlled Electronic Health Record, a patient who has a PCHR could go and define with a very fine degree of granularity where they are, where they consent to their information being shared. They can also see, with a very fine degree of granularity, who's accessed their PCHR. It doesn't seem unreasonable that our patients in the US have the same expectation of allowing, you know, being able to control how their information is used. Or is it? Cynthia? Well, I got top of call.
Yeah. I didn't know you were looking for a response. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, I kind of am. Yeah, no. Is that what you're thinking?
So Andy, do you want to maybe put a flag in this one to come back to, or how do you want to handle this?
Well, I think we'll raise this one just as a note to ONC saying we need to look at this, because you guys can't look at anything unless we raise it. So
right. No. So I think you can definitely make a recommendation and say we don't want this included in the definition of EHI, and we understand that would mean that it probably wouldn't be covered for information blocking, but this is an important issue that needs to be addressed in some capacity or something like that.
But wait a minute. Did we say that it wouldn't be included? I thought Cheryl wanted it as part of information blocking. So I think it's like inclusive of the patient's record, you know, information blocking, I guess, reads back to the EHI definition. And the question mark, what I'm hearing is the provenance considered part of the health information and the health information of showing where their information is being distributed? Is that the question?
Well, on the language there, Cynthia, because provenance, we normally use specifically to say who created the data and the context in which it was created. We don't use it to describe who's accessed it. I think provenance-wise, I think that probably should be EHI, and that's probably why USCDI is going through it. But here we're talking about kind of the information sharing data. Who's it been shared? How's it been shared?
And so, Cynthia, I think, yeah, you got the issue right. All I'm saying to interject into the conversation is that in CURES, the definition of information blocking talks about, interfering with, preventing, or materially discouraging access, exchange, or use of electronic health information. So if you all wanted audit, however you define it, to be covered, to be something that would be looked at under the information blocking provision and enforcement, all I was saying is that the way I read that, it would need to be in the definition of EHI. Otherwise, it seems like it might be, based on what Congress said, outside the scope of the information blocking provision.
Yeah, I think the thing is you want that to be available, and in the same sense, you want data access, most importantly, to be what the patient needs to get the best of care. You know, that's the more important thing is for the patients to get access to their information and get access to pricing and payment. So, you know, I'm fine with the EHI as it is. I think the thing is, I think audit is then part of the USCDI, and it's something that, you know, should be, if HIPAA has had it as a requirement all along, then that that requirement stays, and it becomes part of the electronic health record that's identifiable, because that is identifiable to the patient. So I guess
if you really read the EHI definition, it probably is included because it's patient identifiable information.
Actually, I don't think it is because the information about where data is shared has no identifiable data. I know we as a payer, and I don't know how other payers do it, actually have a database that we maintain. Now, we identify when that data is shared externally. We don't identify all the internal data shares. So if we had vendors or others that are doing work on our behalf, that would not be captured in that capacity. But any external request that, like, for mandates and other things would be, because we need to have that data available to provide. It isn't electronic, so we can't provide it electronically to the patient or the member, but we provide it, through a paper means today. But I don't think it needs to be, or I don't think it should be included as part of EHI, because that's basically expanding on the definition in a way that we can't. I would agree, let USCDI deal with it, because the audit data would then be go through the promotion model that we've already participated in last year and be identified as a data element, and at the appropriate time it could be further scoped out, defined as terms of what that means at a time when potentially that data is there. Andy, what you might have missed in the meeting that we had yesterday was that there was an apparent, I think, misunderstanding that, you know, today payers and others would have that breadcrumb trail that, like, Google has that tells you where the data has gone or where it's
coming. Yeah, we don't have it. I know we don't.
We don't have it. Our systems are not set up that way. So that would be a complete change of how we work, and that will take some years to accomplish.
Oh, I know you don't have it. I'm not sure it's a complete change. I think because the information sharing itself is a auditable activity, it actually wouldn't be that hard to create an abstracted audit trail, technically. But that's kind of by the by. I agree with you guys that full audit trails with a definition of EHI just doesn't seem to hold water. What I've been toying with while you've been talking is the idea, if we say EHI means one, EPI, or EPHI, as defined in HIPAA, two, the any other information that identifies the individual, etc., for healthcare purposes. And I'm actually wondering whether it might be feasible to add a three. I've got a draft on screen there that says three, information concerning patient consent to information sharing, and information as to who has access that patient information. That's it. Keep it that vanilla. You can actually neaten it up and just call it patient consent to information sharing. I'm not so naive as to assume tacit agreement. What do you guys think? Do you think this is a step too far?
Andy, I'm just trying to figure out what my opinion is, so give me a minute.
That's okay.
Andy, while they're thinking about how they feel, can you just reframe it for me one more time, like how the recommendation would work? I just want to make sure I understand.
How do you mean how it would work? What, technically?
Well, so what would... So I see what you have written up there. Can you just restate it? Maybe that would be helpful for me. I'm not sure I'm totally following.
You want me to play Jack and Ori? Okay.
Andy, I think we have trouble with your English sometimes, you know? I'm being honest. I'm looking at 3 and 3, right, under may cause consternation amongst the vendor community.
That's not an opinion. It's not in the rulemaking. That's just my note to us, saying that I'll put that in the notes. Sorry.
Andy's the only one that speaks English.
Well, that's now a matter of public record, John.
I think, you know, we want to, I don't know what you're saying. Patient consent information should access. As I read your sentence in 3, it doesn't quite make sense to me, but.
Okay, that's what it's
saying. Are you saying that a patient, you know, wants to be informed for their patient sharing and wants to be in control of access also and have...
I don't think this is where we should be saying about control.
And then the second part is...
This isn't the right place to talk about
audit,
control.
I thought there was a definition of the audit and then there was the provenance. So there was the audit of information, of where their information is going and consent to, and then the provenance is a separate USPI. But understand, this says relevant statutory terms and provisions. So I'm just trying to understand what the question is and what our answers are.
Okay. All I'm suggesting is that, I'm asking the group as to whether the EHI definition, to Cheryl's point, should be updated to include that item 3 and item 4. So item 3 is the patient consent. So when a patient makes a consent directive, should we treat the consent directive as electronic health information? And then separately, should we treat information about where that electronic health information is being shared, should we also treat that as electronic health information, given that EHI is the definition of the information world which we can talk about? There is no legislative mandate, from what Mark's been saying to us, that allows ONC to consider other classes of data.
Within information blocking is what I'm saying.
Within information blocking, yeah.
Curious language.
So if we want to say, look, we don't want to block patient consent information from being shared, and we want to make sure that access to patient information logs, effectively, are not blocked, we need to include those inside that definition. Is that correct, Mark?
I guess I'm not trying to provide any kind of guidance on this. All I'm saying is that in Cures, the way that information blocking is defined is it's as an interference with the access, exchange, or use of electronic health information. As far as I'm reading it, the information that we would look at for information blocking claims would be EHI as we define it.
I agree with that. I think we're muddying the works here. I think, you know, patient access, what Mark just said was very clear.
No, but that hasn't answered the question. The question is, look, if you guys think that we want to make sure that patient consent decisions are not blocked from sharing, then we should include it. If we think we want to make sure that information about who has accessed and shared patient information is not blocked from being exchanged and shared around, then we should include it. If we are happy for patient consent information not to be shared, and if we're happy for access information about patient records not to be shared, then we should exclude it.
So, Andy, two things. One is, I hear you, I don't know if you, who typed number four, because it's not what you said.
I did, but you can rewrite it. I can't type and talk at the same time.
No, I'm saying, I think it's an important distinction that you keep saying who it's been shared with and who it's been accessed by is a completely different problem. So let's stick to shared, which is what you keep saying. Okay, so that's point number one. Point number two is I don't completely concur with the way that you characterized it as, if we want it to be not blocked, we better name it, and if we are okay with it being blocked, then we don't have to name it. Here's the conundrum I find myself stuck in. Having lived through HIPAA, if you have a definition that doesn't parse out the 56 specific examples or 24 specific examples of what you mean in that definition, the world of organizations who are trying to comply and their consultants and their lawyers will set about the task of trying to figure that out, and ONC will issue guidance documents, and the world, just as it did with HIPAA, will figure out what we mean by that. Alternatively, we can try to put in those 24 or 56 things that we mean it means, and I think that's essentially what we've been spending some time on these calls trying to do. What I'm starting to sense is that 3 and 4 are just examples of the 24 things that we mean when we say that broad definition above. And does listing 3 and 4 specifically serve to clarify or confuse because we haven't listed the other 22? Does that make sense?
I hear what you're saying. And look, part of this is my responding also to some of the focus that's been given on this from outside. I'm okay. I actually, my reading of 2 is that 2 is absolutely focused upon the acts of providing healthcare. And the 3 and 4 drafting are not included in the acts of providing healthcare. They're specific around the access to information. That's how I've read it. I can appreciate others might think differently.
Well, I don't know how much detail or preamble goes into around what is meant by the definition, but I can certainly see helpful preamble. So what it's easy to say and it's really hard to do. What I've been trying to nudge towards is a clear definition that's broad with as few confusing words in it as possible in the actual regulation, and then ample preamble that says, so when we have the definition of EHI, we absolutely mean this, we don't mean this, here's some examples of what we mean, here's some examples of what we don't, so that the community of organizations trying to comply with the law have the best chance of understanding it.
Hey, okay, that's fine. Hang on a second, Mark. John, do you think that actually this is, we should just put this in a preamble, but we should make sure it's called out?
And Andy, I'm just saying I have to jump off right now. I have something else I need to get to right now. Okay. All right.
Great. Thanks. So, John, do you actually think we should talk about this? We should just put it in the preamble?
Yeah, I think that's my opinion. And I'm dead wrong if you think that the definition as written clearly leaves out this stuff. I just haven't convinced myself that. I mean, the definition, I've already given up on the definition is broad and furry. And so the world is going to have to interpret the definition in its broadness and its furriness. And so if you think that these things are, or the group feels that these things are clearly outside the definition, then we have no choice. It's back to what you suggested, is that if we don't call them out as in, then they're not subject to information blocking. What I guess I'm assuming is that the definition is broad enough that I think the world may end up interpreting them as in.
So my interpretation of the definition as it currently stands is it's specifically about past, present, or future health or condition. And it's very, very focused upon, you've got the HIPAA definition and you've got the organization side regulation. And that seems to be very, very much based upon, you know, the current disposition of the patient, or the past, present, and future disposition of the patient, and then the payments for that healthcare. And it absolutely is my interpretation. And I'll be interested how you can interpret what is, albeit a very broad definition, to actually include consent and information sharing and information about where information has been shared to. I cannot see how that could possibly be interpreted in the current drafting of two.
Yeah, I guess I've realized that I've been acting under a somewhat unexpressed philosophy that is going to be not going to have full agreement with the rest of the group here, is that I'm of the opinion that we want a regulation that I want patients to be able to, and I want providers to be able to get access to the data that they can't today, that most people think about when they think of information blocking. And I don't know that I'm articulating this very well, but gosh darn it, if you want information about the care you receive from a provider, you should be able to get it. And if another provider needs it because they're caring for you, they should be able to get it. And if that leads to price transparency or that, I mean, that's what we want. And I just feel like we're really just trying to sweep the last little bit of dust out of every corner. And I think every 1% further we reach increases 10% of the challenge and cost of the regulation. And I know that's not the question we're being asked, so I'm just acknowledging that's the lens
implication.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, and you're right. And I'm not disagreeing with any of that. My view here is I'm just trying to future-proof this, having watched these kinds of regulations get put in place in other jurisdictions, and seeing how, you know, in 2 or 3 years' time, there becomes a bun fight around, well, okay, I didn't know that patient had made that consent direction over there because that wasn't shared with me. I could see their information, but I couldn't see their consent directive because that wasn't included with it.
I'm not sure I followed what you just said, Andy, and I apologize.
Yeah.
I don't know. It looks like it's time for public comment. Maybe we should do that and then come back to this.
They've already flicked onto public comments, please. Okay, yeah, let's get a public comment.
Sure. Operator, can we open the line?
If you'd like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you'd like to move your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And do we have any comments in the queue?
None at this time.
This is a particular subject matter that would be great to have public comment on.
Yeah. So maybe we'll leave the phone number up for the next few minutes, and then we can come back to see if we have any more comments.
Okay. So, Cheryl, what I was trying to say there is the way it's currently drafted, I can see
very clearly that information should be shared that's about healthcare. And gosh darn it, as John said, we'll enable that to happen. Got that. What isn't clear to me is that patient consent directives around that information are included, nor that patients will be able to see where their information has been shared in a transparent way. And looking at lessons learned from elsewhere, where there has been a focus upon the enabling of the sharing, and the gap, as comes to light later, is actually there's a need for better insights as to how that information is being shared and controls upon it. And control, not in a preventing sharing, but just, you know, to respect the wishes of patients and how they want their information to be shared.
Andy, in the example that you're thinking of, is it the sharing for treatment, payment, or operations that is in question?
It was,
end up wanting to know?
It's generally for treatment, actually. And
it is for treatment?
Yeah, it's for treatment. And patients want to know, okay, so who's actually, you know, had my information shared to them? You hit a good point there, which is, well, I should know where I'm receiving treatment. But, you know, quite often...
So, I don't disagree with
that. Go
ahead. Andy, but I'm looking at it, punting it down the road. We have implemented this rule now, and all of a sudden we're opening the gates for many others to use the data for other purposes that may contain identifiable data. And so, per John Kansky's note earlier, how can that possibly be managed? Because we participate in an HIE, like we give data to Indiana, so that we can get clinical records back for them on the patients and be able to do care management. They may share that data with, I don't know how many people, for purposes that they've defined that are appropriate. We wouldn't know who all those people are that are getting that data. So,
absolutely not. But you would just know you shared it with Indiana, and that's it. You could only ever say we've shared it with Indiana Health Insurance.
Right, but what I'm saying is I do think that this needs to be thought out more, because in the discussions that we had yesterday, which I know you weren't part of, I used the example of a vendor, and this is a real vendor whose name will be left out, but they basically get data on behalf of some of our employer groups, and then they create a separate database from identifiable data with the PHI stripped out, but then that database is sold to hundreds of people. So if this is something that comes to fruition, what are their responsibilities and accountabilities related to that data? Because they're not a vendor of ours, so we can't limit what they do. At the end of the day, I have no idea who the hundreds of thousands of people are they sold that data to. So there's some issues that need to be addressed in a bigger forum, I believe. And I agree with the comment, and I'm sorry if I forgot your name, whoever said it, but I think this needs to really focus on the problem we're trying to solve right here, which is getting patients more easy electronic access to their data. And I think this is a problem that really is going to require some greater discussion to ensure that it actually achieves what is expected. Because I believe the responsibilities will be on not only covered entities, but non-covered entities. And as you know, HIPAA only discusses covered entities. Here, we're trying to broaden it to certified responsibilities of certified developers. So what's their responsibility related to this? And essentially, it could mean they need to provide information on all of the uses of that data that basically could be used in even a commercial database that the patient's unaware of.
I agree. Okay, look, I'm not going to dive into this, and I do want to have consensus on this all. That we all speak with one voice to the board of task force on this.
So maybe I'll just say that we recommend that ONC considers potentially including, you know, these types of data, and it might even be possible to take it outside of these regulations and park it.
Yeah, your a headset or whatever you're talking on is sort of muffling your voice, so it's hard to understand you. But I think you're saying...
Oh, cold.
Okay.
I'm saying range it to ONC, say you need to think about this. It might not be the right place to include it. Have a think about it, basically. Does that work for you, Cheryl?
Yeah, I think that's what I mean.
Okay. Have we got any public comments?
Operator, any comments?
There are none in the queue.
Okay, thanks.
Cool. Okay, so it's kind of homework. Before we meet again, can everyone go through the recommendations across these and make sure that we're happy with them? And if you're not happy with them, add in a drafting that you would prefer to have.
Yes.
Hey, Andy, it's just really hard to hear you clearly when you speak. It's very muffled.
Is that better?
FYI, however your phone is.
Yeah, that's better, Andy.
Is that better? Okay, fine. I'm asking everyone to do homework and saying, before we meet again, can you go through the recommendations as they're currently drafted and either note you're in agreement or note that, you know, you want some changes so we can discuss those changes, and so we can get these, at least the state, we can pass them to the Border Task Force on the 5th of April.
And if I have a question. Is there any disclosure anywhere in the ONC ruling that patients need to be informed? If we're not going to have the audit trail and we're not going to have the provenance or whatever, that is there a place that, you know, patients to be aware of how much their information is brokered behind the scenes? Because I think there's a big, vast void of ignorance of how information is aggregated, de-identified, then re-identified, and brokered through many, many, many different players behind the scenes. So I was just wondering if maybe ONC can tell us, or maybe ONC's off the line, but is there a disclosure that just doesn't say that your information is shared for your insurer and potential research, but is there something that's more overt to patients in the rulemaking?
John Lancourt, we called it on you at this point.
He had to leave. He put it in the chat, Andy. I think we need that, Cynthia, because I will tell you, I've been working with these state APCDs for years, and they basically sell everybody's data that's collected in every state, and they provide no notices to anyone that's being sold for a whole variety of purposes.
John's actually just saying, I'm on, but I don't know the specific answer. He'll get that and bring it to the next call. Okay.
I'll comment. This is John Kansky, not Rancourt.
Oh.
I'll comment that I agree with Cynthia and Cheryl that's a problem. I think it's interesting that if that were a covered entity, the patient has that right to request. Nobody ever does it, hardly ever, for an accounting of disclosure. But as soon as that information is disclosed to not a covered entity, it's all bets are off.
Yeah, well, I think the point was made is that, yeah, one, if they are a covered entity, patients aren't aware necessarily that they have to go and request because they're not aware they've got that information. And also, as you said, yeah, if they're not a covered entity, all bets are off.
Got it.
Yeah, and what is the acronym for the European privacy? Is it GDPR?
GDPR.
GDPR. Hi,
great piece of legislation. Great piece of legislation, yep.
The neuron synapsed. Good. So, you know, as we look at where Europe has come ahead of this, wouldn't that also be in preparation for patient full disclosure. Like, I think we're just moving toward patient transparency, full disclosure. So I do think it's worth a discussion in this rulemaking as information blocking is there to keep give patients access. So in a broad way, there's a lot of access behind the scenes of the patient data, except to the patient themselves to control and manage and choose their health care and their care of their wealth as well.
Okay. In the same way that we are absolutely, as a group, in agreement that price information should be included in this definition of EHI, because in the future, then there will be additional regulation around price transparency that's going to depend upon it, I need you guys to think very hard about whether we want to make a recommendation here for this kind of information to be included as well in the definition of EHI, so that in the future there can be regulation to enable precisely what Cynthia's just been talking about.
Will do, Andy. So when is our homework due?
Oh,
and you want it in the Google Doc?
I'm having a
page. Just so you know, I have to edit it outside of my company system because it blocks it. And I think last time I had trouble because it wouldn't recognize my personal email that's associated with Google. So let me know if I need to send you that or something.
Okay. Hey, if you send me anything that you need putting in, I will commit to getting that in for you. That's fine. When is our next work group meeting? Can someone go and chip in and just tell us that?
Next Wednesday? Question mark?
Next Wednesday. Okay, so homework due Tuesday morning? Is that feasible?
Yes, I think that's good.
Okay. I do feel like teacher. Okay.
I have to drop. I'm starting another meeting right now, so I apologize.
Okay. Me too. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.